Before we get started with today's show, I want to remind you about another great ESPN podcast, Stupodity. This week, Stu Gotts, he'll be chatting with Bob Saget. At least that's what Stu Gotts says he's going to do. Be sure to check that out. You can download and subscribe to Stupodity now, as well as The Right Time, wherever you get your podcasts. What do companies like Ring, Hint, and Tecovas all have in common? They all use NetSuite to accelerate their growth. Successful companies know that in order to grow faster, you must have the right tools. If you want to take your company from 2 million to 10 million or 10 million to hundreds of millions in revenue, NetSuite by Oracle gives you the tools to turbocharge your growth. With NetSuite, you get a full picture of your business, finance, inventory, HR, customers, and more. It's everything you need to grow all in one place right from your phone or computer. NetSuite will give you the visibility and control you need to make the right decisions and grow with confidence. That's why NetSuite customers grow faster than the S&P 500. NetSuite is the world's number one cloud business system, trusted by more than 19,000 companies. It's the last system you'll ever need. NetSuite, business grows here. Schedule your free product tour right now and receive your free guide, 6 ways to run a more profitable business, at netsuite.com/Bomani. That's netsuite.com/Bomani. netsuite.com/Bomani. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. Coming up on this episode of The Right Time, I got a way to make the NFL Combine better. Yeah, you want to hear that. We'll also talk about what's going on with that CBA and your voicemails about that time you had to kick your homeboy out of y'all's group. But first... All right, so as you guys know, I'm all in on this Zion thing, right? I'm totally here for it. As you know, also, I am typically a, hey, let's just see. Hey, let's just see. Hey, let's just see. I did that with Zion in college. I ain't doing that now. I am all about enjoying this. I think this is fascinating to watch, and I feel like for me, this is the first time as a full-on adult that I'm truly able to appreciate and watch a ground-up superstar situation, right? Like, I'm here for it. Now, Gabe, let me ask you, like, how many times have you watched Zion play?
Maybe 10 times.
Yeah. You're like me. It's like, oh, Zion's on. Okay. I'm gonna check that. Like, I sit down at night. I pull up the computer. I'll go look at the score, see what the games are. And I'm like, oh, New Orleans, huh? It's time to pull up the league pass. Like, I would be like, oh, Brandon Ingram is good to see him improve. But I'd be out there watching it without Zion. And I'm like, yo, why am I not watching SVU? I'm sure it's on a channel somewhere, right? But now we got the Zion thing. We had 2 games in the last week against the Lakers. Zion balled in both. Of course, LeBron was better, but Zion put up, what, 35 in this last one? Poor Kyle Kuzma. Did you see Kyle Kuzma get the alley-oop on his head? Hey, man, I'm like, Kyle Kuzma, you've been in the league too long for that, man. You got to feel that when it's happening and run out the way. I am not impressed by you simply being in the shot. You got to get down on the fast break, right? Because, like, if Zion gonna miss the dunk, it'll probably fly way far, and then you'll be in a position for the fast break. Right? That would be the way that I would look at it. I feel like I saw somebody in that game take a charge from Zion. Would you do that? I'm trying to think. Game 7, you're up by 1 point. It's the last play of the game. And the way to seal it is by you stepping in front of Zion and taking a charge. And I'm just saying, like, what good is winning a championship if I can't go to the parade because I'm in the hospital? You know? Like, I mean, maybe that's just how I'm wired. I don't really so much see the point there, but it's happening there. And if you don't believe that what's happening with Zion is real, all you need to look at is the way that LeBron is out here treating that dude. Like, you, Gabe, you're a Lakers fan. Have you noticed this, that LeBron's out here sending his jersey to Ja Morant after the game and talk about how cool it is that he sends it back? That tenor does not exist with Zion.
Yeah, I have noticed that. Other people have too, and it's been claimed that it has something to do with Zion not signing with Clutch.
Well, I wonder about that, right? You got to remember, didn't LeBron go to, like, Pittsburgh or Charlottesville? Wasn't it Charlottesville that LeBron went to watch his Zion game?
He did, yes.
Yeah, right? And then this dude don't sign with you? Oh, okay. Like, maybe there's a level of saltiness that comes from that. I think the real part of it is no one's talking about Ja Morant being the heir to the throne. Right? Like, Ja Morant is just a real cool story to most people, but people ain't out here acting like Ja's gonna be next. We're acting like Zion is gonna be next. And if you ain't believe it, when Zion made that move on Kuzma, made that spin and dunked, and, you know, ESPN doing what we do, baby, we showing you crowd shots because the crowd is excited. Like, show the crowd how excited you are. Oh, snap, get it back on the court. LeBron shot a 40-footer. And he's out here talking about, well, yeah, it was a 2-for-1 situation. And that's why you shot it from 40 feet. That's what it was. That's why you had to do that. Okay, gotcha. Now, I'm enjoying this because, yeah, tell me what you think about this. I feel like this is a little bit of the Jordan and LeBron coming out.
Doesn't LeBron try to take down every sort of up-and-comer that's coming at the throne?
That's what I'm saying, right? Like, I think that this is a matter of, hey, man, the most respect that LeBron can show you is a certain measure of disrespect. You know what I'm saying? Like that, that's what he can give you. And that's what he's given with Zion. And look, man, this is the way that he should be treating it. If Zion's going to come out here in these games and put up 35, right? He's going to come out here and put up 29. Yo, this is a real threat right now. Like, let's think about this with the Pelicans next year. Cause the Pelicans have all these resources, right? They've got all these assets that they got in the Anthony Davis trade. I am here for the Lonzo Ball experience. Like, do you realize how much fun it's going to be with Lonzo Ball having somebody like Zion Williamson to get the ball to? My guess is, and this is maybe just what I'd do if I was the Pelicans, I'm trading Drew Holiday in the offseason. It's not because I don't like Drew Holiday. It's because I do. I still believe that Lonzo, what Lonzo can give you if you turn it over to him is that contagious ball movement, right? And you probably noticed this when he first got to the Lakers, even though that team wasn't very good, when he was playing, the ball moves, right? Like when he's out there, people keep the ball moving around and around and around. And so if you got a guy like Zion and you got an offense that's predicated on ball movement, oh man, you got something here. But they're in a position where they can package some of what they've got, where they got Zion, they got Brandon Ingram, you got Lonzo Ball, you can package some of this other stuff into getting another legitimate player. Like, this is not just Zion's the guy of the future. The Pelicans could very easily be a team that the Lakers have to contend with within the next 2 years. If David Griffin is creative with it, they can be a team that you got to worry about next year if Zion is as cold as he appears to be. Because what I think is going to happen with Zion next year, I think he clearly has never been on a real physical fitness regimen. Did you see it when he took off his shirt, his jersey to trade it with, not even trade, but he gave it to JaVale McGee, and he was there in the white undershirt, and he was out there looking like Uncle Zion.
Like Uncle Zion. How much do you think he weighs? Not to fat shame.
No, but if Zion is 6'6", I would guess in the 290 to 300 range.
He's a big boy.
That would be my guess, because, like, he's real, I mean, obviously, he's, like, real thick in the legs. He has the tightest shorts I've ever seen for somebody whose shorts are that long, right? Like, we're not talking about John Stockton tight shorts. Zion's shorts look like, I mean, they're a couple inches from being like capri pants. And I don't mean that in the length. I mean that in the snug. Like that's a giant young man. I figure somebody going to get him in there somewhere and they're going to knock 25 pounds off that, right? They knock 25 pounds off that, give him like some core work. There's actually room perhaps for him to be even more explosive than he is right now. So my guess is if anybody cares, and if he cares, and I think he cares, then he'll be back at a different weight. And part of why I say I think he cares is as LeBron has gotten more competitive with this Zion thing, I'm noticing more and more that Zion is starting to see what the extent of his powers. And he's starting to care in that way. And by the way, we saw that a bit at Duke also. Let them get down and see what happens with Zion. Zion ain't really here for a whole lot of this losing. We got to remember, he been out there playing in high school against them little dudes that we saw in all those clips. You know he wasn't doing no whole lot of losing. He's not here for that. So, like, I see that level of dog in him, and I see LeBron recognize that this is not just what's next. This is like what's right around the corner. This is what it's about to be. And he ain't about to be Zion's big brother. Nah, dog. That one is not going down at all. Like he and Kevin Durant eventually got to like a certain level of cool when it came to it. But you saw that in some levels with Kevin Durant. It's like, yo, this isn't a guy that I can look at in this way. Steph Curry, remember that? Like Steph Curry, it was all good when Steph Curry was at Davidson. But then when Steph got kind of close, you know, as LeBron got kind of cold on it. He's doing this with Zion from age 19. You are not taking this throne. Not happening. I'd also like to know, Gabe, you ever think about this? LeBron is 16 years older than Zion Williamson.
That's a real indicator of how fast time flies and just how old you are. Like, I remember when he was coming into the league and it was like, choose your fighter with him and Melo and Dwayne Wade.
Yes.
I was a Melo guy initially, by the way.
Ah, well, I mean, that wasn't like the worst call you could have made. They were very good as rookie year.
It wasn't, but it's certainly like those types of things where you have to choose and you immediately like stand for that person and have to constantly defend. That flipped really quickly on, oh, well, LeBron's just better, man.
Right. We tried to get Melo in the rookie of the year conversation, but it was like, come on. That's how cold LeBron was. The Nuggets were like 25 games better Carmelo's rookie year versus the year before he got there. And it was still like, yeah, nah, anyway, we going with this other dude. But I love seeing this love. Like, I love that game. That game was so good between the Lakers and Pelicans. And I just really love the idea that we've got this measure of competition that's coming out of the best player in the league because he sees the next player in the league coming. And the next player in the league is like, nah, I want to get there. Like, this is what I want to be. Because I also imagine that Zion wants LeBron to like him, right? Like, Zion wants LeBron to take him in that way. And then LeBron's going to push him off, and that's probably going to make Zion be like, oh, okay, I guess I'm going to just have to show you, huh? I got it. That's what's up. And that's where we are. That's what we got. By the way, while I'm here, I have a brief moment. We brought him in, Gabe, with the talk. Can we talk about the little serious thing?
Yes, we can.
Wash your hands. All I'm asking you to do is wash your hands. I have taken it upon myself here at the South Street Seaport. I am the hand washer marshal. I'm checking everybody for what level of vigor they are using at the sink when they are washing their hands. Come on, man. Wash y'all hands. I ain't trying to catch this. You ain't trying to catch this. I know some of y'all don't have insurance. Best option you got, wash your hands. Do it for you, do it for me, do it for the Shaolin Temple, do it for whatever, and just so you know, hand sanitizer. You know why they call it hand sanitizer? Because it's not the same thing as soap. While we're on it, I may talk about this a little more later. Gabe, I feel like the inventor of soap. How come his name isn't on buildings all over the world? His or her name?
Yeah, or at least on a monument somewhere, like a Thomas Edison type deal.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I feel like there's a lot of, like, inventions out here that are drastically underrated because we take them for granted, right? So, like, the light bulb. We're real big into the invention of the light bulb because that, like, we're like, oh, wow, that really changed the game. Like, you could understand how that changed the game. What's another one of these? The printing press, right? The printing press came around. We understand how that changed the game. That ushered in a paradigm shift, right? The person that invents, like, the personal computer. I don't know who that is, but, you know, like, all those things. But we got these big inventions that we talk about, you know. We're a little too excited about the cotton gin, but whatever, right? Like, this is one that changed the game. But somebody out here looked around the filthy-ass world and said, enough. Something has to change. Something has to change. And just think about what our lives would be without soap. Like, who invented deodorant? What would our lives be without deodorant? Mr. Shore, Mr. Secret, whoever that is. Shout out to you, right? I don't feel like you get enough credit. The first person to be like, hey, man, we need something on our feet before we put our shoes on. Who's that person? You realize how much money that saved us? You realize how much we'd have to, like, buy new shoes if there were no socks? Well, I got another one for you, Gabe. The dude that was like, hold on, watch this. I'm going to take this string and tie it around my waist, and then my pants won't fall down. A lot of heroes out here that we don't give enough credit to. And the way that you can pay homage to that nameless person who invented soap is very simple. Wash your hands. My parents are old. If one of y'all kill my parents because y'all nasty, I'm going to find you. All right, we'll be back in a minute to talk about the NFL Combine. But first, when it comes to scoring great hires for your business, you may be up against a few obstacles like an overwhelming amount of resumes, too many applicants but not enough of the right ones, trouble spotting the most qualified candidates in a sea of possibilities. That's why you need ZipRecruiter on your team. No matter the industry, healthcare to manufacturing to business services, ZipRecruiter makes hiring faster and easier. And now you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani. First, when you post a job on ZipRecruiter, it gets sent out to over 100 top job sites. Then ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology hustles for you to find people with the right experience for your job and invites them to apply. In fact, check out this stat. 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. So add ZipRecruiter to your roster to help you win the hiring game. To try ZipRecruiter for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani. That's ZipRecruiter.com/BOMANI. ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. All right, so, you know, they've been putting the combine on, like, more primetime hours because y'all enjoy watching these dudes, like, lift weights. And I think that there's a group of people for whom watching the combine is something I totally understand. The idea, though, that the NFL wants to make this into a primetime event, I've seen some of the numbers on viewership. This just isn't that. Like, I feel like this is something specifically for, like, the core audience, for, like, a niche set of people. And you should televise it and use it as a niche sort of thing. Because here's what it is for me when it comes to the combine. What I need, I can get from GIFs, right? You let me know who had the balls 40 times. Right, cool, that's all I need. I'm not paying nearly close enough attention to this to where I need to know all these players, so I got to watch them do all the drills and everything else. I'm not that dude. I ain't even that qualified to really understand everything that I'm seeing when it's going on out there. So I'm not going to be a dude that's out here watching the combine. But I thought about how we could make the combine something that I might watch, how we can make the combine just a little better. Hear me out. So I was thinking to myself, I ain't really trying to watch dudes like just bench press 225 pounds. That's not really what's up. And I was like, I don't want to watch dudes run to 40, but that part's not fair because I'll watch people run. I'll watch people like run track. I'll do that. And then I was like, wait a minute. Can you imagine how much time they would save at the combine if they had multiple people running at one time? Like, don't you realize how much better that would be? Rather than just one person running at a time, we could turn it into a race. I would watch that. Like Henry Ruggs and a bunch of the other fast people. Yeah, I would watch that. And then it got me to thinking. Because, you know, the combine, they have you do stuff like the cone drills or whatever. They always have them do like a whole bunch of different stuff. They put people through like different kind of little individual workouts at, you know, points and stuff like that. And it dawned on me. Here's how we going to make this work. All right. And if we do this, I'm going to watch it. You're going to watch it. Everybody's going to watch it. You ready? Let's replace the combine with field day. Yeah, I remember field day. Gabe, I'm stunned by this. I asked you about this. Y'all didn't have field day at your school?
We don't, and I'd like you to explain field day to all the people that don't know.
Field day is like just like a big old track meet for your whole grade, right? So, you know, we had like, I think it was 7 different teachers in like 4th grade, for example, and every class is its own team, and you go compete in all kinds of track and field events. They'd be like, somebody would run the 400, we called it the big dog, you know, the 400, the 200, the 100, and then you'd have different relays, and then after that, you got like other kinds of events like the 3-legged race, the water balloon toss, all those kinds of things. You with me now? You see what we got going here? We need field day for the combine. If they're going to be out here racing, then cool. Let's get everybody on the line to race. That would be what was up. The 3-legged race, for example. That's how you can tell what teamwork is. Like, I feel like if you got offensive linemen, you need to put them 2 offensive linemen together and see how well they can coordinate themselves. Cause so much of that job is coordination. You have like the baseball, like the softball toss, you know. How is that different than like the quarterbacks when they get out here and just see if they can throw the ball as far as they can? That's what I'm saying to you right now. We just need to put a little flavor into this. Right now, the combine is so damn serious. We need to make it a little bit more fun. Or like at our field day, they had a thing where, you start the race, you have to put on like some sort of get up. Like they do this at halftime of the basketball games with kids where you got to put on some get up that doesn't really fit. And then you run to your teammate and you take the get up off. And then your teammate has to put the get up on and then run the other way. See, that could be what's up, right? Like what I think would really be what's up for the combine is I'm trying to think of the name of it. It's not like the Highlander games But you know them joints with new cast, be like, it's like a triathlon, but they have to like climb up nets and stuff, like it's American Gladiators and all that. Not the American Ninja Warrior, but they be out there like in the woods and doing that kind of stuff. I feel like that would tell you a lot about who could be a good football player, don't you?
Well, it's interesting that you talk about American Gladiator and stuff, because I was looking up to see what the original form of field day was, and it's in the military.
I can see it. I can see it. How about this? Can we have them dudes engage in some Greco-Roman or freestyle wrestling? I'd watch that. Would you watch football players wrestle?
I probably would.
I totally would watch football players wrestle.
These are elite athletes we're talking
about. That's what I'm saying, right? Like, I would totally want to witness these things. I feel like this is the way we could do it. Or I got another one that I think would be great for the combine. Why don't we have some dudes fight? They need to do something that's set up to have dudes fight, but they don't realize that it's a setup for them to fight. You understand what I'm saying? So just have some guy that you charge, like, go in there and find somebody to fight. And then next thing you know, they just start scrapping it out. I think that could happen. There's this dude a few years ago. I don't know if you remember this dude. His name was, I want to say, Kenrick Ellis. I want to say he started at South Carolina. It may have been Penn State. I can't remember. I think it's South Carolina, though, is where he started. And then he transferred to Hampton. Yeah, he transferred to Hampton. And he was some big giant, like 6'5", 340 type, as I recall it. But he had that character red flag. And the character red flag was he had caught some assault charge in college. And his story was, basically, he got into a fight with some dude, and that dude wound up with a broken jaw. Now, Ellis's story was that that dude had attacked him with a baseball bat, and that's how we got to the point of the broken jaw. And all I'm saying is, somebody comes to fight you, and they show up with a baseball bat, but they leave with a broken jaw. I'm assuming that NFL teams must not have believed his story, because that looks like the number one pick in the draft to me. Like we don't wait till the second round to get a guy who can do that. You understand what I mean? Now, granted, he wasn't a very good football player, but none of these things exist in a vacuum. You know what I'm saying? So that's what we need. How can we get these cats just to scrap it out at the combine?
Kind of a King of the Hill type of situation.
There we go. There we go. Also saw something said they're thinking about moving the combine to out of Indianapolis to Los Angeles, or they said maybe Las Vegas. And I'm just telling you right now, moving that combine to Las Vegas is the worst idea I've ever heard. Like, don't even do that to the kids. Don't even do that, right? A bunch of them got money for the first time in their lives. You're going to tell them they can't hang out in Las Vegas. But you're going to put them in Las Vegas. Come on, homie, don't do that. That's not a good look. That's not a good look at all. But, yes, NFL field day. That's what we need. Put me in charge. Your ratings will stinking skyrocket. All right, we'll be back in a minute to talk about the NFL CBA, but first, tired of that 230 feeling? You're not alone. In fact, research shows that more than 70% of us hit the wall after lunch. Let a 5-hour energy shot help you leap over that wall instead of crashing into it. Anyone who travels frequently knows how tiring it can be. Whether you're on business or on vacation, 5-hour energy shot can help you stay alert and energized wherever you may be headed. 5-hour energy helps you get through your crazy on-the-go life. With zero sugar, 4 calories, and a convenient portable size, it's the perfect pick-me-up for busy, hard-working people. Now it comes in 2 extra-strength tropical tastes. Strawberry banana and tropical burst. They're great. They are delicious and can take you to a tropical on-the-go experience. Try them both, then go online to shop5hourenergy.com and use the code BOMANI to receive a one-time offer of 10% off your order. That's shop5hourenergy.com. Use the code BOMANI. Go to shop5hourenergy.com and use the code BOMANI to receive a one-time offer of 10%. 5-Hour Energy. Energy on the go. Hey, I don't know what you're doing right now, but if you got a little time on your hands, how about you go wash your hands? How you like that? You want to wash your hands? Give it a try. Maybe you should wash your hands. Anyway, the collective bargaining agreement thing still going on with the NFL is getting a little dicey. There seems to be a little, I mean, I don't know if dissension is the right word to use. I'm going to say there's some dissension in the ranks of the players. But, I mean, as many players as there are, that's what's going to happen. This is a very difficult union to lead. This is a very difficult union to marshal. It just has so many more members who are under such different circumstances. It's a different game. So like, really, man, the NFL union is so weak, man. You're asking for a lot out of this particular union. It's a very, very tough situation that they have here. But what we got, though, there seems to be a fairly significant faction of players that believes that they can get a better deal than the NFL has offered them right now. There also appears to be a very significant faction of players who believe that this is the best deal that the NFL is going to offer, and therefore they should take it. I had a back and forth. I think the dude's name is Nick Sundberg. He's the long snapper, I want to say, for Washington. And he and Robert Griffin were having a back and forth. And Robert Griffin, believe it or not, he's the one that's trying to fight the powers that be. Like, Griffin is like, yo, we need to get what's ours. A 50-50 split is what we deserve, and we can't back down from this. You know, like, he was really going hard on it. And Sundberg's position was really very simple. What happens if the owners, like, if they pull what they offered us now off the table, and then they come back and the best they'll offer us is like a 44% share or something like that? That's his concern. But he also said out loud on Twitter that basically if we were to strike, or if there was to be a picket line, that players would cross it. And look, it's a legitimate concern, right? The NFL has a track record of dudes crossing the picket line, so I get why he's afraid of it. But it says so much about the NFL Players Association and the circumstances that they're in that a dude would say that out loud, right? Like, this is the only place I can think of where someone who has a leadership position in the union, and I would say being the player rep is a leadership position, this is the only place I can think of where somebody who has a leadership position would come out and say, we're not strong enough to stand tall. Look, even if you think that's true, and I think that a lot of these unions deep down inside understand that, even if you know that's true, you don't say that in front of people. And I made that point on Twitter, and the Sundberg dude hit me back and was like, yo, given what our history is, you know, I'm like, yo, man, I'm not questioning whether what you're saying is correct. I am questioning what you're doing right now as a matter of strategy. You don't say that. Right? You need to be out here fronting like you Billy Badass. Like, we ready to go to the mattresses for this. That's the way that you need to play this game. Instead, he's like, come on, dog. You know people ain't gonna be down for this. And by the way, for what it's worth, I don't think that you'd have the same issues with guys crossing the picket line if you did this in 2020 in the way that you did in 1987. And the biggest reason why I don't think that this would happen is that the guys make so much more money now than they did then. So the 87 strike involves some very significant players crossing the picket line, right? Like Lawrence Taylor, as I recall, crossed the picket line. Dan Fouts. Dan Fouts crossed the picket line in 1987. Guys like that. And the thing for them was they looked around and they said, we're not going to win this anyway. Why am I passing up checks? And so a dude like Lawrence Taylor, with all the money that he was making, was not going to pass up those checks. But I could make the argument here that if Lawrence Taylor were making the kind of money that guys make now, even though the check is bigger, he could pass up the checks because he has received previous checks. Right? A lot of these cats sitting on a different kind of stack than they were. Now, maybe you'll have some of these guys at the bottom who are coming in and they decide that they will cross the picket line, but I don't think that would wind up being such a big deal, because I think given the economics of what the NFL is right now, yeah, it's some dudes that's out here broke who need some money, but I feel like the star players, who are the ones that are going to make somebody actually watch or actually show up in these places, I feel like the star players have a greater incentive and greater security than ever that would allow them to not be the ones to cross the picket line. So I think the circumstances are a little bit different there. But that ain't really why I wanted to come to y'all to talk about this stuff with the collective bargaining agreement. Gabe, I don't know if you saw this. Did you see the Pouncey brothers and how they're saying to vote down this deal and what they're willing to do for cats if they vote down the deal?
To kind of subsidize their strike?
That's right. They want to start their own strike fund. Each Pouncey brother says that he is willing to put $250,000 in on the strike fund. He also said something interesting that I didn't fully realize, was that apparently all the players had been withholding the checks from Madden, like the money they get for their likenesses being used in Madden, that for 3 years they had withheld that. And that's supposed to be something like 60 G's gross. Pouncey called it 30 G's after they take off tax. But still, they got that money off of that. And he's just like, hey, man, you know, we got a strike fund here. You need some money. Come holler at us. And I don't know about you, man, but if I'm broke, I am not hollering at the Pouncey brothers. You know why? Because even after this whole thing is over, I might still be broke, and I don't want to owe those two dudes money. Do you want to owe them money? No, sir. Because let me tell you something, man. They're coming to collect. It'll be the two of them, and you know who might come with them to collect? Richie Incognito. You know him and Pouncey are boys. What you going to do when the Pouncies want their money? I said this on TV. I'm going to say it again. Unless you know them, like y'all real cool, you really trying to borrow money from somebody who ain't got no collar on their shirt? Like, I was watching that video, man. I think it was Mike Pouncey. He out there with no shirt on and all them damn tattoos talking about if you need some money, come borrow it from me. When's the last time you put in a loan application and the person you gave it to didn't have a shirt on? Is that somebody you feel like you want to borrow money from? Because I don't feel like that's somebody I want to borrow money from. Significant money. What are you talking about here? And look, man, this is the thing. This doesn't apply to everybody that needs to borrow money. People don't come borrow money from you because they so good at getting money. You know what I mean? Because let me tell you something about this, too. When that person comes to borrow money from you, you think you're the only person that that person borrowed money from? You think before that person came to borrow money from you, they were like, yo, I'm going to pay back every person I owe before I begin to, acquire more debt. No, man. They trying to get this money from wherever they at. You don't know where you are in the line to get this money, right? Pouncey Brothers got to know that. At least you would think. Because we all know the rule on loaning money. Switching up the perspective here on loaning money. If y'all don't know nothing about loaning money, this is the rule about loaning money. Some of you young guys ain't been in a position where y'all need to understand this fully, but this is the bottom line about loaning people money. Don't loan nobody anything that you're going to be mad if they don't give it to you back. Like, that's for your own sanity. Like, once you loan somebody some money, you want them to give it to you. But once you loan somebody some money, you got to act like that's in the wind. Why? Because if that person was a good bet to give you back the money, chances are they wouldn't be borrowing it from you. And that's not because there's anything wrong with them. I get it. Times is hard. I'm just telling you, people who borrow money in those times, like, I ain't got no money. I need to borrow some. Somebody who's like, yo, I need to borrow some money because I just don't have all of this right now. That's a little bit of a different situation. I need to borrow money to pay my rent. That person's not paying you back. I'm trying to think. The last time I loaned somebody some money because they straight ahead needed to like, yo, my rent's due. I don't think I've ever gotten a dime of that money back. I don't think so. I'm not mad about it, right? Because I understand the game. But I don't think I have ever loaned somebody some money for something like very specific in that way. Like, yo, man, they about to repossess my car. I don't think I've ever gotten that money back. Nah, that's not happening. Not happening. And so for the Pouncies, this is a high likelihood that whatever this money is they loaning people, they're not really getting it back. They're thinking, yo, well, once these game checks start, these cats will pay you. No. I don't think that's how it's going to go, brother. I don't think that's how it's going to be. And I don't know if the Pouncey brothers appreciate this in the way that I appreciate it when it comes to this philosophy about paying people back. Right? Which is, hey, chances are they're not going to be able to do it. You got to know that going in. I don't feel like the Pouncey brothers are going to be approaching it from that standpoint. I feel like them dudes going to want their money. That's right. I don't think anybody wants to be in that situation. I really, really don't. Right? Pouncey Brothers out here making payday loans. We need to write a jingle for them. You know how good that jingle would be? Like, I need, in fact, after the show, Gabe, me and you, we going to get somebody to like play some notes on a piano. You know what I'm saying? We could turn this into a business. We could. Not a business that you should patronize, but a business that could be successful.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
All right, Bo, this first story comes from business.
This is Renee Merle. I'm a reporter at the Washington Post. Last week, the Securities and Exchange Commission reached a settlement with Steven Seagal, the star of action movies like Under Siege. Seagal was accused of not telling his millions of online followers that he was being paid to promote a cryptocurrency. A company called Bitcoin 2Gen promised to pay Seagal nearly $1 million or about $1 million to promote their initial coin offering. Seagal did so, posted about the company on his Facebook page and on his Twitter account, but he didn't tell his followers that he was being paid to do so. That's not allowed under the Securities and Exchange Commission rules. Now, Seagal's attorneys say that one, he's cooperated with the investigation and he's moved on, but also he just saw this as another time that a celebrity was being paid to promote a product. But this SEC sees these things differently. These types of promotions have to be disclosed, and Seagal didn't do so. Seagal is going to turn over more than $300,000 to the SEC as part of this settlement. Some of it is giving back what he was paid by the company already. Another $150,000 of it is a fine that he's going to be paying directly to the SEC. This isn't the first time the SEC has come down on celebrities for not disclosing when they're getting paid to promote products or securities online. In 2018, the SEC fined Floyd Mayweather and a musician named DJ Khaled thousands of dollars for similar conduct, basically promoting cryptocurrencies online without telling their millions of followers online that they were being paid to do so. The SEC has grown really concerned that the world of cryptocurrencies is full of scams and that the average investor doesn't understand all the risks involved. And so they want the people who promote them online, especially celebrities with large followings, to disclose when they're being paid to promote these products.
Look, this is all I'm saying right now, okay? If a financial company believes that you will indulge or give them money because any of the following people said so, Steven Seagal, Floyd Mayweather, or DJ Khaled, it is because they think you are an idiot. You know why? Because only an idiot is taking financial advice from those people. Like, you just need to understand this. These are not people that people in the finance world respect, right? Ask those people in the finance world if they believe that they would jump on an investment opportunity because DJ Khaled said so, right? Ask them if they would do anything in the world because Floyd Mayweather said so. None of them would do that. They think that anyone who would do that is a moron. Right? I think this all logically checks out, okay? So they think that you'd have to be an idiot to listen to DJ Khaled when it comes to financial advice. And so what are they doing? They telling DJ Khaled to give financial advice. They telling Steven Seagal to give financial advice. They're telling Floyd Mayweather to give financial advice. They think that taking advice from those people would make you a moron, meaning that when they tell those people to get you to come on board, they're hunting for morons. I've been trying to tell y'all about this funny money for years and years and years. I have been warning all of y'all about this funny money since we got hip to that Silk Road situation, which was all kinds of people selling dope on the internet using funny money by and large. And I think some people's funny money was disappeared. It was a whole lot that's going on. All I'm telling you right now is DJ Khaled come out here and is like, hey, man, y'all want to get on some of this funny money? If your answer is, I mean, I wouldn't, but now that DJ Khaled said so, you are the problem. Ain't much to say after that, is it?
No, no, sir.
Am I wrong, though?
No, you're not.
And I, by the way, I'm just saying they think you stupid for taking financial advice from DJ Khaled. Actually, no, I am saying this. If you're taking financial advice, if you think Floyd read the fine print?
No.
That's all I'm asking. No. You think Floyd read? I mean, I'm sure Floyd got people around him, right? Maybe. I'm just telling you, I'm just saying to the rest of you, this is being peddled to you by people who don't respect you using people that those people also don't respect. That's all.
You don't read the fine print. You're going to expect Steven Seagal to? God damn.
Steven Seagal. And by the way, who in 2020 is like, yo, Steven Seagal, if he thinks it's a good idea, it must be. Who cares that much about Steven Seagal's opinion in 2020?
He's still in the league.
He's still there. I told you in 2003. Did you ever go to the Reggae Fest at UCLA?
I was like in and about Reggae Fest, but I didn't actually spend like a significant amount of time at one.
Yeah, I went to the Reggae Fest one time and there was this big old tall white dude with a ponytail playing guitar and then give it up for Steven Seagal. I'm like, what? Yeah, he does that.
Did you see Bill Walton at Reggae Fest?
I did not see Bill Walton at Reggae Fest. I really wish I had. I'd like to hang out with Bill Walton. Only once, but I'd like to.
I think you would too. Did you see his comment about Liberty?
I did.
Yeah, yeah.
I did. This, this is a line right here. And these are Bill Walton's opinions, not mine. This is a line. The most shameful thing in the history of UCLA basketball is scheduling a game against Liberty. And the second most shameful was that they lose it, they almost lose. They did lose.
2018.
Wow. Liberty's trying too, man. Like, there's a, like, people have kind of gotten into the story, but the story is Liberty's trying.
All right. This next story comes from Metro.
I'm Morgan Windsor, and I'm a reporter for ABC News. Last week, I published a story about a man in Oregon who was arrested after police say he used counterfeit cash to purchase Girl Scout cookies. The Salem Police Department said it responded to two different calls in mid-February from local Girl Scout troops who reported receiving counterfeit U.S. currency on separate occasions while selling cookies outside a Walmart. In each instance, the suspect allegedly used a counterfeit $20 bill to buy a box of Girl Scout cookies and was given legitimate currency and change. The Girl Scout troops recognized the money as fake and called 911. Police were able to identify the suspect, 36-year-old Camden Ducharme of Salem, Oregon, through video surveillance and with the assistance of Walmart security officers. The security guards recognized Ducharme when he returned to the store on February 23rd, and they contacted police. Ducharme was arrested and charged with first-degree forgery as well as third-degree theft. He could not be reached for comment, and it was unclear whether he has an attorney. It was also unclear what kind of Girl Scout cookies he had bought.
That man bought Girl Scout cookies with funny money. I saw somebody make a joke on Twitter that, not even a joke, they just said it happened. They bought some Girl Scout cookies and paid with a 20, and little mama put that thing up to the light and gave it a good feel. Right? Like, do that thing with your hand like you do when somebody acts like they got money. Like, she did that, you know, put it in there. Like, she checked for the counterfeit. And who knew there was scum out here that was paying the Girl Scouts with funny money? They gonna put them under the jail. Like, it's bad enough. You know, they don't really play no games about, this is a different kind of funny money, by the way. That cryptocurrency is one kind of funny money, but this is the original funny money, right? Like, that's the extra crispy funny money that I was talking about on the last thing. This is the tried and true funny money. They don't take too kindly to funny money. And you out here running game on the Girl Scouts? And I got, when they said the Girl Scouts figured it out, who figured it out and how? Like, did one of the Girl Scouts, the one that's the banker, be like, hey, something don't feel right, right? Like, was there one Girl Scout in the troop who went to the other one and was like, money be green, money feel like money? Or is it just a parent that was like, oh, damn, we got God?
Two things there. Who's training the kids on checking the money? And is the girl that's like the bank for the Girl Scouts, was she also the bank in Monopoly growing up?
Oh, absolutely. That part, number one, is true. That right there, we know. But here's the thing, man. I don't feel like you really need to be trained in funny money. I mean, money do feel like money. You know when you get some money that don't feel like money. Right? Like, you might have been in a place where you're like, okay, I guess I got to take it. But you know when that money don't feel right. I don't think you need a class in that. Especially not, I mean... Like, it costs money to join the Girl Scouts, right? They got the kind of parents, they give them allowance. They done felt money before.
Yeah, it's either incredibly dirty, so you know it's authentic.
Yes.
Or it's, like, so crisp and so clean and has, like, a bunch of different holograms and whatnot.
Yeah, exactly. Like it's, you know money when you get it. You know money when you get it.
All right, this last story comes from music.
This is Sean Grant checking in from The Source magazine. First, the Fat Boys break up. Then Public Enemy is next. Chuck D and Flavor Flav, members of the iconic hip-hop group Public Enemy, have become, well, public enemies. After being together for 3 decades, Flav would no longer be a member of the group. The ousting of the renowned hype man comes shortly after Flav sent a cease and desist to the Sanders campaign after an announcement that Public Enemy Radio will perform at a rally in LA. The letter issued to the campaign stated Flav's likeness, image, and trademark clock were being used without authorization, and also Flav has not shared an endorsement for any candidate. The letter reads, while Chuck is certainly free to express his political views as he sees fit, his voice does not speak for Public Enemy. The planned performance will only be Chuck D of Public Enemy. It would not be a performance by Public Public Enemy. Adding his own personal flavor to the dispute, Flav threw in a handwritten note to the presidential hopeful that read, "Hey Bernie, don't do this." In response, Chuck D's lawyer stated from a legal standpoint, Chuck could perform as Public Enemy if he ever wanted to. He is the sole owner of the Public Enemy trademark. From there, the two took it to Twitter. Chuck D tweeting, "If there was a bag, Flav would be there front and center. He would not do benefit shows. Sued me in court the first time, I let him back in. His ambulance lawyer sued me again on Friday, and so now he stays home and better find rehab." In a separate message, he stated, "My last straw was long ago. It's not about Bernie with Flav." Chuck D would also say that Flav snubbed a performance at a festival hosted by iconic actor Harry Belafonte after Belafonte traveled 3,000 miles to introduce Public Enemy at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2013. Not acknowledging his alleged missteps beyond the campaign performance, Flav responded, "Are you kidding me right now? Over Bernie Sanders? You want to destroy something we built over 35 years over politics?" He would go on to state that while he has battled addiction, he is currently not on drugs. He will also tweet with denying suing Chuck D before closing with, "I'm not your employee. I'm your partner. You can't fire me. There is no Public Enemy without Flavor Flav. So let's get it right, Chuck."
Yep, see, he got to the real issue here. Everybody's talking about this is about Bernie. Nah, man, this ain't about Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders is kind of a secondary concern to this thing there. This is Flav getting tired of getting little brothered. In the end, though, Chuck make all the decisions, right? Like, and the idea, and I get why this is the case, but Chuck owns the name. Chuck owns it all. And whether Flav likes it or not, that kind of sort of makes him an employee. There's a strong argument for why Chuck should own that stuff. There's a strong, I mean, I wouldn't want Flavor Flav to be in charge, myself. But the ugliness of it to me is the basically Chuck D sunning him in front of everyone. And all Flav can be like is, "Yo, this is what we built." And he's right, because Public Enemy couldn't become as large as they did without Flavor Flav, because otherwise it'd have been too damn serious. Also, in spite of, like, Chuck was writing most of Flav's stuff or whatever, but, like, Flavor Flav is dope. I'm not saying he's one of the greatest MCs of all time or anything like that, but whenever Flav jumps on a beat, a track, whatever it is, whether he's just talking or he's doing a verse or whatever, it hits. The Flavor Flav song on just about every PE album is a banger, right? But you just kind of sort of the other dude, right? Like, you just kind of seasoning on this matter. That's what it is. And so Chuck made the larger political decision about what this was going to be. And this is what I think. I think that for Flav, when they was making money, he ain't care what the politics of that stuff was. Coincidentally, he was also smoking rocks. But I don't think that, like, at that time the checks was coming in, he's like, yeah, Chuck could have flipped up the whole essence of the group and they could have endorsed Newt Gingrich in 1994. And if there was some checks in it, Flav would probably be down, right? Like, that's how it goes. I have no concept whatsoever about what exactly Flav's true political conscience is. But I do believe this probably leans more toward what Chuck is saying. If it had been a check, he'd have been there. But he's basically mad, understandably, because Chuck decides whatever it is that Public Enemy does. That's the game. All right, we'll be back in a minute with your voicemails. But first, sometimes for inspiration, you just have to look up. For more than 60 years, the Goodyear blimp has fueled greatness on the gridiron by providing aerial coverage of some of the most legendary moments in college football history. When the Goodyear blimp rises above a stadium, it inspires players to reach higher and rise to the challenge of the game's biggest moments. Now, it's your turn to go further with Goodyear. Discover tires made to rise above the rest. Learn more at Goodyear.com. Goodyear, more driven.
Hey, this is Bomani. You have reached the right time voicemail. Say whatever you want. Get creative with it. But this is your place to talk back to the show. So talk back. Peace.
All right, Bo. In line with Flava Flav getting kicked out of Public Enemy, we thought we'd open up the voicemail lines to hear about stories from when you or a friend of yours was kicked out of their crew for doing something whack. Our first story comes from Anthony in Oakland.
One of my boys was becoming a barber, and he was transitioning from being just like on a side hustle to making it more professional with his business. So the first time, you know, we always pretty much, I just send him a text message. He let me know what time works, and I come down and he cuts me up, you know, it's all good to go. He started switching and transitioning to, you know, being more professional. So he was like, go online, check out the email, and then, you know, just put in your time on there so he can keep track of his appointment. So I did that the first time, and I got a text message, you know, maybe 30 minutes later saying, hey, I double booked, I'm sorry, can we reschedule for a different time? I'm like, all right, cool, no problem. He being professional, still making sure to do that. The second time, I booked it online. He did the same thing. And I'm like, man, my time is running, man. I'm trying to book and plan around this. And he's messing up. And then the third and final straw, I booked the appointment. I got down there. And then 5 minutes after I got down there, he sends me a text asking if I can come in an hour and a half. At that point in time, I had to cut my man's off, and he just became disrespectful with the time. And even though, you know, that was my boy, I just had to let that man go because, come on, man, time is money. You can't just be over here. You know, even when you trust the relationship of a barber, you had to, you know, cut that thing off. So not the most exciting stuff, but, you know, if you have a barber, you know, that's your barber. And when you got to break up with your barber, it's tough.
Yeah, I can't relate anymore. I can't break up with my barber. He go everywhere I go.
It's interesting. Many people have stories of like a homie who was a barber who then took it professional.
Yeah, and then, but yeah, I used to have barbers.
Nothing more to add. This was a very good story.
I agree. I'm just, I mean, there was a time I could relate to such a thing, and that time is not now, unfortunately. It's just, yeah.
Next one comes from John in Texas.
I'm great. I have a well-shaped head.
So you ain't got a friend who's a barber for you?
They don't make the kind of barber I need, Gabe. Just saying. They don't.
All right, our next story comes from John in Texas.
Just after college, I had a fraternity brother who I was pretty tight with, and he was having a pretty rough time. And no matter how much we talked to him about getting certain jobs or whatever, you know, starting at the bottom, he wouldn't do it. And he was living with his girlfriend, and he sort of justified things by saying if he was at home taking care of everything, you know, cooking and cleaning, whatever, then she should be all right with that. And it got a little frustrating. We were able to help him get a job. He got fired shortly after for not showing up on time. And then one day, come to find out that the girl was not his girlfriend. They had gotten married and not told anybody. And they got married because he needed the medical benefits. Why did he need the medical benefits? Because he had a child with another girl. And that child had special needs. And he had left all of that out from our group of fraternity brothers. And then wanted us to help him drive to Washington so that he could move in with his mom. So needless to say, we didn't talk for 12 years, I think. And then we kind of caught back up about a year ago. Anyway, yeah, crazy times with fraternity brothers.
I mean, are they still married?
12 years?
Yo, I mean, so is the beef just that he didn't tell them?
I guess so.
I wouldn't have told him. Would you have told him?
No. What? Everybody's got skeletons.
Yeah, I will say, though, that was like a barbershop quartet of skeletons.
The delivery was really something, too, from John. Just kind of like slow, methodical, like,
yeah,
almost like allowing pregnant pauses so that like you could react in the middle.
Yeah, I don't know if I would tell them, though. I feel like that I understand the shame. I understand where he was coming from. You think he's still married?
I don't know, man.
Hey, that kid still needs the benefits. The kid, what, like 13 now? That kid still needs the medical benefits.
Fraternity brothers. I thought y'all were supposed to be brothers. Like, that clearly has it. There's clearly a line in the sand. I thought that was supposed to be like a till death do us part type of thing.
Oh, I guess we're going to see.
Oof. Our last one, the guy didn't leave his name or where he's from, but this is a good story.
A couple of my buddies, we were doing a Sunday Slunday. Big thing, go out, you do some drinking, day drinking, and kicking it. So we go downtown, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, by the way, and they always have these things about dress code. You can't wear this, you can't wear that. So one day we go into a bar, and the guy tells me, and I'm wearing a fitted cap to the front, and he tells me I can't come in. I will have to bend the brim of my cap. Brand new hat, by the way. And he tells me I have to bend the brim of it. First of all, I'm not going to ruin a $35 brand new hat to get into a bar. It's just not going to happen. But my buddy on the side says, come on, bro, stop being insubordinate. What? Stop being insubordinate? So once you said that, and this was a white bouncer, we're all black. So I'm like, nah, fam, that's just not going to roll. So for a long time, I refused to just go out with this guy because I just couldn't believe what he did. in public.
Bruh, did he say insubordinate?
He did, and I didn't know that was like language that normal people use.
Right!
It's kind of like a police type of thing.
That's my confusion. I had no idea anybody would say that about like somebody you knew.
That's
wow.
Not a homie right there, man.
Wow,
that is
no,
not a homie.
That's the police, right? Like that, he is, he the police. He could not be in the crew. Nope. Like, I was thinking it was going to be more of these, where I was like, damn, homie, it's really got to be like that. But no, not after I heard that one. After I heard that one, I'm like, you made the right call. Is there a righter call that he could have made under those circumstances than the call he made?
Maybe to turn his friend into the authorities? He's the feds.
Oh my God, I couldn't believe it. I'm stunned. Like, I'm here with you right now, still talking about it. Absolutely stunned.
It's almost like unbelievable.
What did you call me?
I'll tell you, when I was listening to this voicemail this morning, I was like, mouth ajar. Like, what now? Let me just rewind that tape really quick.
Wow. Damn, by the way, man, we got to get some spray in this studio. I've been talking in this microphone. I don't know who might have or whatchamacallit. Like, I ain't really trying to be funny about this, man, but hey, we got to... I need to talk to you about getting some cans in on every microphone needed. Hey, let me hurry up and wrap this show up so I can make sure I'm good. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing a couple times a week. My man Gabe Bassane handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Also, thank you to our sponsors. Thanks to NetSuite. Thank you to ZipRecruiter. Thank you to 5-Hour Energy. Also, thank you to Goodyear. Also, thank you to our If You Haven't Heard contributors. Thank you to Renee Merle of the Washington Post. Check out her story on Steven Seagal's failed cryptocurrency promotion at WashingtonPost.com. Also, thank you to Morgan Windsor of ABC News. Check out her story about a man trying to buy Girl Scout cookies with counterfeit money. Check that at ABCNews.com. And thank you to Sean Grant of The Source. Check out his story at thesource.com about how the public enemy beef between Chuck D and Flavor Flav got to be so bad. All right, remember, subscribe to The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars, I'm inclined to believe you are a hater, and we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.
The Right Time with Bomani Jones is presented by Goodyear. Drive always discovers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.